Welcome to Leading Lines, a podcast from Vanderbilt University. I'm your host, Derek Bruff, director of the Vanderbilt Center for Teaching. It's spring here in Nashville, which means it's allergy season, which is why I might sound a little different today. We have a fascinating interview in this episode with Carwell Bjork James, assistant professor of anthropology here at Vanderbilt University. Carwell is on the board of the Wiki Education Foundation, a nonprofit focused on fostering connections between higher education and Wikipedia. The foundation has a lot of resources for instructors interested in having their students contribute to Wikipedia, something Carwell has been doing in his own teaching for several years now. Back in episode 13 of Leading Lines, I interviewed Tim Foster, a doctoral student in Spanish and Portuguese who worked with his students to build out the Portuguese language Wikipedia page on Nashville. Tim and Carwell were both on a panel on teaching with Wikipedia that I helped organize back in the fall. Our interview with Carwell was conducted by Gayatri Narasimham, Associate Director of the Vanderbilt Institute for Digital Learning, who met Carwell at that panel. In the interview, Carwell talks about the problem of representation on Wikipedia, ways he's engaged his students with Wikipedia, as well as ways he's contributed to the encyclopedia himself over the years. He makes a strong pitch for faculty to write for Wikipedia, not really because of their role as scholars, but because of the teaching that they do.
Hi, I'm here with Carwell Bjork James, who's assistant professor in anthropology and who's very involved with Wikipedia. He's also on the board of the Wiki Education Foundation. Carwell, you've also been on the panel discussing Wikipedia with Tim Foster a few months back, right?
Yes.
So that's when I actually met you. So you're an anthropologist, and how did you get involved with Wikipedia, and how is that? Talk to us about that relationship and your interest in it.
So I've been an editor on Wikipedia. That's just anyone who goes online and establishes an account and then adds to the encyclopedia for about as long as when I went back to grad school to study anthropology. And those two things weren't necessarily closely linked. I was more concerned with what are the parts of Wikipedia that were missing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And trying to fit, and this was in 2005 when I first started editing. And that does really guide my choice of how to use it in the classroom as well, because I've mostly used it in a human rights of indigenous peoples class, and there are over 6,000 indigenous peoples, and the coverage of them it varies, right? Some of them, there's a lot of detailed information, and some there's very little. And also the coverage of Wikipedia as an encyclopedia is very uneven based on who has the most access to technology, to academic publication, and to the particular language communities of the largest Wikipedias. So I am interested in making good on Wikipedia's promise to describe more of the world and describe the world evenly, and my students have the opportunity to do that in their class.
So do you do fieldwork where you have actually met a lot of the indigenous peoples about whom you write in Wikipedia and talk about?
I mean, my fieldwork is in Bolivia, and Bolivia is, depending on you look at, either a plurality or majority indigenous country. And a lot of my fieldwork has been urban, but it's also been with the ways indigenous movements from outside of the city that try and influence national policy by coming to the city. It is the case now that most indigenous people in Bolivia live in cities. Yes, some of the work that I have done has been to cover things on Wikipedia based on, it's been a choice of topics based on what I've experienced in fieldwork. But one of the things that's true about Wikipedia is that its structure is not a place for original research. So I can't, for example, use one of the interviews that I would do with an activist on the ground go somewhere and see how things are on the ground and then just go and type that into Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, it relies on having published either primary or secondary sources that can be cited and whose citations can be verified to show things there. But it was the case that when I was in the field and dealing with political conflicts or social actors or other folks, that I would use Wikipedia as kind of an adjunct to some of the field work I did. So when I would look in depth at a particular organization, say the Confederation of Indigenous Peoples of Bolivia, I would try and get all my notes together about what exactly, when was it founded, what had they done, what were their various actions. And because that stuff is the kind of like pure factual information that Wikipedia thrives on, I would use Wikipedia as a place to put that information up and out to the world.
So, you know, a common perception about Wikipedia is the reliability of its sources and its information. And you're using Wikipedia in your research and maybe in your classes to teach your students about the indigenous peoples that you cover in your research and through your fieldwork. How do you ensure the reliability of this information? Are there other online published sources that you can actually... you said you have references you can then verify and so
right.
on. So that must be a very important process for your work particularly, right?
Yeah, and I think actually Wikipedia is an interesting arena because it is outside of the university space, the published source that is most reliant on and most uses formal citation as a method. And so it makes it a very good place to teach about that process, right? And it is the case that like Wikipedia has developed a reputation because it is an encyclopedia that anyone can mm-hmm. go on and edit as a place where people might insert unreliable information, which I think is a problem that there are good tools for dealing with on Wikipedia. The different question of how do like popularly held beliefs or popularly created like tropes or master narratives tend to then influence the way that encyclopedias and other publications are written is, I think, the bigger problem for accuracy with Wikipedia. I know there have been a number of, particularly in the scientific field, studies comparing, say, Encyclopedia Britannica mm-hmm. and Wikipedia on things, and Wikipedia does quite well in these side-by-side comparisons of what is more factual, what is more up-to-date, and so on. But it varies a lot with topic. But I'm not using Wikipedia primarily as the preferred reference material for my students. I'm not saying, hey, I want you to learn about the history of indigenous peoples in the United States, so go read the Cherokee page, go mm-hmm. read. But I do, when there are particular events, I know that both I and they will go and consult there. And part of, because Wikipedia is, I think, the seventh most common website, and of all of those, the only one, none of the websites that are higher have mass amounts of information about factual things. So it is a really important source for people. So teaching people, oh, when you see that page, don't forget the citations down below. Mm-hmm. Check up and see what those things are is important. And it's something that we kind of need to be teaching as academics. We know our students are going to read on Wikipedia, and they should read Wikipedia, but they should edit Wikipedia when it's wrong, and they should cite the sources that they find below on Wikipedia after they've gone and checked them, right? So that's a kind of little four-part rule that actually every professor should know just because it is such an important information source for people in the world today.
So would you say, do you use Wikipedia regularly in your classes for teaching? So I want to bring up the example when Tim Foster talked about creating a page about, you know, this in Portuguese mm-hmm. for his students, and the difficulties that they encountered and how they did it as a class project. Have you done something similar in your class? Or because a lot of your work is also involving, you know, research that's not in the U.S. and
right.
probably in a language that's not English. So how have you dealt with these kinds of difficulties?
Yeah, I mean, so the place where I have, then this semester is my third time doing this, is in teaching human rights of indigenous peoples. That is an area where I have a structured Wikipedia assignment that is built up through the course of the semester, and students will pick a topic and then do library research in order to provide themselves with the necessary sources and to really become acquainted with the topic. And in a lot of ways, it's similar to a term paper that I might have in the class, except for it has to be written in a particular style, right? It has to be a neutral point of view encyclopedia article. And I tend to have that in dialogue with some other kind of written product that they're also going to produce, because I actually think, especially in areas that are politically charged or controversial, that there's something very productive about forcing someone to say, okay, I have opinions, I have advocacy, all this stuff, but what is it that I know on the most objective and concrete level? Let me write all of that out. And then let me say, oh, and I also think maybe this pipeline shouldn't be built for the following reasons. Or I also think that these people have been marginalized in their school and that's unfair and this is why. Or I just find other people who have those opinions and I properly attribute them, right? And so that work is actually, I think, like a really productive bit of work. And at the same time, there is a narrative function, right? Like, it's not just that, like, knowing that, you know, even the most quote-unquote factual framework, right, is actually shaped by some kind of underlying cultural narrative is something that I know as an anthropologist and that I'm actually spending a lot of time in that class in addition to saying, oh, there are lots of indigenous peoples around the world, let's think about them, also asking what is the overall narrative that we have for particularly North American history, right, and what place is it assigned to indigenous peoples and what do we see or don't we see about them through that process, and how do we rethink some of these narratives? And and often that means confronting erasure, right? It means remembering that Nashville didn't begin the moment that you know, James Robertson and John Sevier showed up, and it also means looking at particular narratives of how history has been told over time. So another thing that we do in this class is we read a text by a historian called named James Merrill, who's looked at how are American Indians figured in U.S. historiography, right? And what ideas are laid into narratives. And one of those ideas, for example, is that you know, Europeans are settlers and Native people are roaming throughout. And then they're said to not have, you know, they have kind of hunting grounds, but not territories. And they have, they don't have countries. They have, you know, they have different words for their leaders and other things like that. So I also have students as an early assignment go through and find an American history article and say, oh, which of these tropes appear in there and what can we do about that narration?
This is a very fascinating aspect of Wikipedia editing to me, that you're talking about objectivity and not opinions, and you are talking about, you know, finding references to back your claim, even if you have any opinions that should be backed by. So has it been a process of discovery over time for you, teaching students to use Wikipedia in meaningful ways, but also creating content that is also objective in this sense? Because from what you're talking about, it's like not just the history, the anthropology, the people that you're studying, but it's also the rest of the American history or world history, for that example, for that matter.
Yeah, and I do think that it's a learning, like being a Wikipedia editor is an important learning process, including in those moments where multiple people with multiple points of view are editing the same document, right? And so there's a very direct feedback and push and pull around how do we understand this term, what is it valuable for, all this kind of stuff. And figuring out how to say, how to think, it changes how you think about knowledge, right? And its production. And so that's, there's work that's involved with that and bringing students along through that. There's some of the work involves that. I mean, I tend to think of it as I emphasize the things that are relevant to the class for doing that. And for just practical reasons, I haven't, the class that this knowledge and socially generated concepts fits best in is actually my intro class, but I feel like I don't want to do as much technical teaching with them, right? That says, how are we going to write and how are we going to this kind of stuff, because there's a lot to cover anyway. Yes, there's a lot. I think it's actually valuable on both of those levels. Are they getting the content and are they getting, thinking through how do you write about something in a way that can be shared and neutral. Mm-hmm. And what does neutral mean anyway? And what kind of knowledge is excluded from, you know, traditional versions of things? And yeah, over the longer term, I'd say that some of my writing on and editing, personal writing and editing on Wikipedia has been in this kind of experimental mode of like, what are the things that are natural parts of how we describe something, right? Mm-hmm. So if Wikipedia has a page on an armament, right? Say a bomb that's been dropped somewhere over time. Does it just discover sort of the caliber and the ballistics and other stuff like this? Or does it also cover, oh, this was used in this war. Oh, this changed things in this way. Mm-hmm. Oh, this has these consequences, right? And what Wikipedia forces or like allows us to do is we're generating a kind of spec sheet for a lot of things, but it isn't just one angle in, right? Presumably the people who did all this writing before were concerned with, you know, a military audience, but maybe there's another audience that says, oh, it's that bomb that right. caused this atrocity in that situation. Mm-hmm. And how is that, you know, a different perspective?
Yeah, that's I think the most fascinating aspect of Wikipedia is it's not like a journal where it is very static, or it's not like Encyclopedia Britannica, for example, which is also more controlled in the kinds of entries that can be made. Mm-hmm. This is more interactive, and you get perspectives from different people, and you have to deal with those perspectives. And when you said about your teaching your students objective writing, I think that's a very interesting aspect of using Wikipedia, because it's unlike any other kind of writing. This is very practical. Immediately you're, you know, faced with every sentence you have to be careful about writing. Mm-hmm. And attributing the references and so on. I think that this is great. So that brings me to this question. Is this why you chose Wikipedia instead of any other medium? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of different ways of where you can add information online. So you could create blog posts, and you could create Google Docs or other mm-hmm. kinds of ways to share information. But Wikipedia is a very unique way. So tell me why you chose this.
I mean, I do actually in my intro class create a course blog. In both of those formats, you do have this appreciation of like, oh, I'm writing something that I know other people are going to read. Mm-hmm. I guess it's technically available to other people, but it's not indexed, right?
Is it available to other students or outside?
It would be available to others outside, but it's also not. What I'm looking for. It's not indexed on search engines and things like that. So it's not very likely that someone would come to it and decide, like, oh, or that, you know, 10 years from now someone will say, oh, but when you were a freshman, you thought this, this, and that. But it does allow them to respond back and forth. And I feel like that's a good medium for when you're exploring what are my perspectives? Mm-hmm. What is my opinion? Where that's really, and how am I coming to understand, you know, grappling with an ethical issue or grappling with an idea that I haven't had to deal with before? Mm-hmm. I think that's a good medium. Whereas Wikipedia also has the interactive, you know, you put it out there and other people are going to read it. And I can say on my first day, you know, whatever you write is going to be read by whoever's interested in your topic in the future. And there is a challenge of specialization, sort of, mm-hmm. around it, where it's much more helpful to be able to write something more complete, you know, maybe something that's poorly covered now. So that means, you know, it would be a bad thing for an intro to world geography class, right? Because, man, do we have all of that stuff pretty well filled out. Right. But it's really great for an indigenous rights class. And it's also, I make it an option for my graduate theory students as one of their, and I don't give very much training, to be fair, as an option for, you can describe an author or a highly referenced text or whatever, write an encyclopedia article mm-hmm. about it. Because those things are tremendously useful, right? If someone is to, you know, encounter Judith Butler's gender trouble for the first time and there's a good encyclopedia article about it, man, is it just really helpful to have an outline and some, you know, objective things and mm-hmm. how did this influence that and so on. And so, yeah, I think that it's a... I had to make some choices, and I definitely opted for some things that are visible, but then don't necessarily reveal everything about the student to, like, a permanent audience. Like, I'm always very aware of that,
right.
The intensely archived aspect of a lot of internet media.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a very interesting point, and it actually relates to this next question I thought of asking you is, you've written a lot of Wikipedia articles. Have you had many occasions where you've had to go back and revise your statements about particular things because of more recent discoveries, recent opinions that have surfaced?
Sometimes. Yeah, and Wikipedia is a strange medium, right? Because your name isn't sitting out there attached to everything that you've worked on. So I feel like if it were, perhaps I would go be a more meticulous and recurrent updater, and probably would have fewer articles that I had worked on. But I do find myself either defending or amplifying things that I've written in the past, for sure. And I also, you develop, either a sense of ownership or a sense of concern, shall we say, about particular pieces. And sometimes, sometimes I write opinion pieces, I write academic pieces, and I write stuff for Wikipedia, and sometimes I'm deciding which is the medium that is best to respond to something, right? And sometimes it's just that we don't have a shared cognitive idea about it. Or, let me give another example. Something comes up in a lot of conversation over and over again, and I'm writing using a term, but what I really just want to refer to is how that term is used conventionally, what is its meaning, and so on. So, for instance, there is a subsection that I've written of the white supremacy page called Academic Use of the Term, right? There is a very different academic usage of white supremacy to mean a system of racial inequality in which white people are advantaged. That doesn't mean, KKK hoods and kind of, like, revanchist, like, fantastical positioning around, like, oh, we're going to, like, and it doesn't mean, like, overt, parading around of the idea of, like, white people are better, right? And so, because so many times that would come up in conversation, I kind of said, okay, I'll go write the section of the page that says, okay, here are these, like, 10 people who use this term, here are some of their formal definitions, here's how it's distinguished from everything else, and then I don't remember if it was from my personal writing or if it was somewhere else on Wikipedia where someone would use that term, and then I would just say, okay, you want to know what this is talking about? They're not talking about this. They're talking about that. Let's write that up. But you then do have the satisfaction that maybe that influences a public dialogue, that maybe people who are not aware of that, who are wrestling with that term for the first time, will have a chance. And that maybe is a reason why even, like, I would say much more of my Wikipedia work has been about race than my academic work, right? Because it's a part of a public dialogue, and it's just helpful to have information out there.
And to also have clear concepts of what it is that they're talking about, that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
To me, because I'm almost like an outsider coming into these conversations, it's very helpful to understand these different terminologies, and so it's very helpful when you said that in conversation, this is what it means. Mm-hmm. Not this, but this.
Right.
Those kinds of contrasts.
The other thing that I would say is that when I have wrestled with something for a long time and found out a lot, typically for teaching purposes, then I'm very tempted to upload and share that particular bit of research in Wikipedia. So, and this is also a race example for what it's worth. But so I was teaching biology and culture of race, and there's a lot of conversation about human genetic clustering, right? And how does this map onto or not map onto race? And it turned out that a lot of this conversation was really about a 2002 study with a small sample size and so on. Dominates the conversation. Like, when Nicholas Wade wrote this very widely reviewed and, a lot of molecular geneticists really frustrated with it, he didn't say, let's go to all the molecular genetics and read all of it. He said, oh, but this study in 2002. And those of us who do hard science or even soft science know mm-hmm. that, like, actually you look for the more recent studies with a larger sample size mm-hmm. and with comprehensive methodology. So I taught in my class, I had my class read through, like, five or six of these different studies. How are they framed? What has changed over time? What can you see? All of that. So I had charts in lecture notes, right? Mm-hmm. So I just took that material and added it to the human genetic clustering Wikipedia page. So as much as I like teaching students, I kind of, there's a side of me that I would love to give the faculty seminar that says, here's how you take all that work that you're doing that maybe isn't your, you're not on the frontier of the research, mm-hmm. you're the synthesizer for students, and make yourself into the synthesizer for a broader public.
Right, yeah. So that's a different way to use it, right? I mean, we've been talking about how you're using Wikipedia in your class for your students. Mm-hmm. But this broader way of doing things is also very useful. And it's also useful for students, right?
Yeah.
So you could imagine, I mean, faculty would think about all the concepts that they are interested in and the research that's been done and do a synthesis of things, and then it'll be a more authoritarian work than, or authoritative work mm-hmm. than what's out there that's opinions, that's just dispersed in the community, and
right.
so on. That's very interesting. So that brings me to the next question, which is, tell us about the Wikimedia Foundation. What is your involvement with it?
So the Wikimedia Foundation is an institution that was set up to support initially Wikipedia and then a bunch of other free content projects that kind of spun out from it, include the okay. most prominent of which are Wiki Commons or commons.wikimedia.org and I don't know if it's the most prominent, but also Wikidata and Wikisource. So Wikidata is an attempt to build structured data sets about factual information, and Wikisource is a place to host text, like and both, and all of these produce free culture, at least freely redistributable cultural products, mm-hmm. right? And so there's a bunch of legal work that is built around that and a bunch of technical work. And so the foundation was set up to host that. Within that project, one thing that people realized they could do was the kind of educational projects that I'm talking about. And so about, I think, 8 or 10 years ago, people started within, kind of supported by Wikimedia, these kind of college-level education projects. There's lots of community conversation about them. And Wikimedia, by the way, is a democratically run or, like, elected board that comes out of the Wikimedia community. There's a lot of in-person meetings, all that kind of stuff. And so one of those, the education project in the U.S., came out of that. And then came to a point where it decided it wanted to scale up, and the global Wikipedia community also had a question of where do we put our resources, how mm-hmm. and so on. So Wiki education folks working predominantly in the U.S. spun off into a separate NGO called the Wiki Education Foundation.
Okay.
And they're friends. And in fact, Wiki Education Foundation will go and provide software to Wikimedia now. They sort of spun off, formed a new office, and began a new nonprofit about 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I've joined the board of it. There's several of us who are educators and several of us who are Wikipedians, and I'm in that overlap, who are on the board of it, in addition to some other people who are involved in other education work or other nonprofit work. And it's an organization, I think of about 9 or 10 staff right now, based in San Francisco, that provides support for higher education teaching across the country.
Mm-hmm.
It has, I think, 7,000 students per semester right now are editing, using
right.
Wikipedia as part of their assignments, or in some cases are doing critical work or doing writing work or doing other projects. And it's been growing rapidly. It's, you know, that represents, you know, hundreds of classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's producing, you know, a substantial bordering on two-digit percentage of all edits to the English language Wikipedia at this point. So it's a big deal, and we're really excited about it. And figuring out ways to support people is the core of its mission, because this started off as a kind of tinkering process. And when I was first teaching using Wikipedia 5 years ago, the WikiEd had not spun off yet. And the tools available were more limited. And now you as a professor teaching with Wikipedia can get a dashboard where you're leading all of your students through online training modules where they're learning about how to write with Wikipedia, and they're seeing videos, and they're getting, you know, to do automatic, like it's basically like a, like it's a MOOC at the beginning, and then it's not MOOC anymore because it's based on the classroom, but you do have a dashboard where you can see how many, what edits have my students made, how many characters have they added, what changes, what have they been up to this week, and are any of those changes like directly plagiarized from other sources? Do I need to be concerned about that? So all of those things have been built in over time. And so the US program has built these tools and then is offering them to the other programs that do Wikipedia education around the world. So to be like relocalized and put in each other, different language. So
Is this a completely independent of other organizations? So Google, for example, had, they were going to create libraries, right? So is it independent of that? This is exclusive to Wikipedia and
so,
the educators?
And so this is a, education-focused independent NGO. I do think that a couple of years ago, Google gave a grant, you know, not like in exchange for other services, just for, because they respected the work, and some other, most of it's foundation funded, although a lot of it is foundations that were, you know, emerged from the tech sector, right? Because, interest in Wikipedia is strong there. So one thing that I think is important to understand about the Wikimedia community, including Wikipedia, is that it produces free and open source content. And I'm not sure if all of the software is open source, but it's designed to facilitate the like massive and horizontal sharing of knowledge and other information by producing things that don't have copyrights associated with them, or that have Creative Commons licenses or other things like that. Because the goal, at least of Wikipedia, was to have something that can be, it wasn't to print encyclopedias, right? It was to produce a widely disseminatable item. And the way to do that was to have content that the authors didn't, you know, gave up at the bottom of every edit page. That you're giving up the rights to the text that you're putting in.
Right,
so you should, you know, not copy your journal article into it. but you should, you know, produce something that can be freely reproducible. And it means that there's a tremendous amount of, you know, diagrams and photos and video and other things that are being hosted through the system. And because it's such a large user base of people who are not content producers, but who are content users, it's able to fund that pretty well, right? Wikipedia is. So many, many people will log on in a given day, I think hundreds of millions of people. And so if they do a fund drive for a few days at the end of the year, they're going to be able to sustain the necessary infrastructure for all of that. And so in many ways, it's one of the most important free content host sites that has come up with a model to make that sustainable, which is really important.
That's very impressive. And I'm very impressed that you're on the board of one of, what, nine people you said? That's great. So are your students part of the group that's editing the 7,000 or?
Yeah, they're among the
editors. The number of students.
Yes.
That's awesome. So this is great information. So if a faculty wants to be part of this group, how do they, where can they get information?
So they can go to wikiedu.org. And they also, I mean, that's kind of the best site to start out. There are a set of both PDF and physical pamphlets that have been built over time. This isn't one of the other things that WikiEd and to some extent, the international community, like in dialogue with one another, mm-hmm. produced, you know, a booklet editing Wikipedia or assessing a Wikipedia article or illustrating on Wikipedia. And also, increasingly, there's been production of kind of subject guides that say, okay, you're writing an article about a disease mm-hmm. or a medical article. Here's, you know, the typical structure of a disease article or of a, like, a cell article or things like that. Make sure these elements are there. Here's some resources. Here you can click through that to that. And, you know, I think most people have seen the front face of Wikipedia, maybe even clicked to the homepage. Mm-hmm. Most people maybe have not seen the talk pages on the back and the project pages where people are gathering and saying, oh, well, a lot of us write articles about ethnic groups. How can we make them, structure them similarly?
Right.
How can we assess them for what is a good and a bad article? And when, how can we incentivize people to make the best articles?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to learn, I would say. But it's not what I think WikiEd's role has been, is to make that learning as unintimidating as possible.
Right.
So that it is definitely possible, you know, if people see the semester, you know, 6 or 8 weeks away and they're thinking, I'd love to do this. If they're on campus, I'd love to talk with them personally. And mm-hmm. if they are, you know, looking at this from further away, there's definitely a lot of, you know, resources through WikiEd, both printed ones and, you know, phone calls and online chats and online, there are online office hours for WikiEd to professors, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of, in the middle of the semester, can be the student who says, hey, I'm having this crisis, help me out.
This is awesome. So we'll definitely have links to the information that you have here in our podcast page. So that's good
great.
To know. So before we end, I have one final question we're asking all our podcast contributors. What is your favorite analog technology?
Oh, I want to say the analog watch. but I don't know if this is the best. I think in a lot of ways, both because they can be crafted and quite beautiful, and because you can watch something work, right? Like, and particularly the ones that expose some of their gear work or let you
right.
see the ways that they function.
Yeah, cool. Some of them are very expensive too, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of Swiss watches.
They're elaborate. Yes. I do feel like one of the things that we're seeing is that, and that maybe people didn't expect 15 or 20 years ago, is that as there's been more and more digital technology, we're in kind of a generation of digital technology
mm-hmm.
that is interested in crafting, right? That's like, how do we make physical objects?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like when I first started using computers, everyone thought, oh, but we're on this track towards virtual everything. And no one anticipated that we might be on a track to using the virtual to create new physical things. And so, while that's not something that I do, it is something that I think is fascinating. And
that's great. I think that's fascinating too, when you just said about the creative aspect of it. You don't, mm-hmm. it may be invisible in digital technology. It's very obvious in analog where you have to put things together.
Right.
That's interesting. Thank you very much, Carl.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Carl Bjork James, Assistant Professor of Anthropology at Vanderbilt University. In the show notes, you'll find links to information about Carwell, as well as the Wiki Education Foundation. After hearing Carwell talk about the Foundation's work, I'm sorely tempted to build a Wikipedia project into my fall first-year writing seminar. But I'm already planning a podcast project with my students. I'm not sure I've got room for another big project. Too many ideas, too little time. You can find all our past episodes, including that interview with Tim Foster, about his use of Wikipedia in a Portuguese language course, on our website, leadinglinespod.com. We welcome your comments and questions there and on Twitter, where our handle is @LeadingLinesPod. You can subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or your other favorite podcast app. And if you like what you hear on the podcast, please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. That helps other listeners find the show. Leading Lines is produced by the Center for Teaching, the Vanderbilt Institute for Digital Learning, the Office of Scholarly Communications, and the Associate Provost for Digital Learning. This episode was edited by Rhett McDaniel. Look for new episodes the first and third Monday of each month. I'm your host, Derek Bruff. Thanks for listening.